It's Monday, August 6th, 2007. Thanks for tuning in to The Sounds in My Head. This, however, is not going to be your average episode of The Sounds in My Head where I play songs and bands I think you might have missed. Nope, this episode is going to be a little more in the vein of This American Life. Diligent listeners to The Sounds in My Head will remember an episode a few years back where I recounted the story of my cat getting stuck in a tree in Prospect Park, Brooklyn. I got pretty much positive feedback on that show, and so I'm going to do another all-talking episode. That's right, this episode, I'm going to tell a story. It's a story mostly about the band I like to call my favorite band in the whole world, Brooklyn's musical ambassadors of love, They Might Be Giants, and how that band has intertwined itself into the rest of my life. And even if you're not a huge They Might Be Giants fan like I am, I still think you should stick around and listen to the show, because I've been told it's a good story. So without further ado, here's They Might Be Giants and Kelly and Daniel on The Sounds in My Head.
This is the podcast you're listening to. This is the one you chose.
The year was 1990. The music on the radio, like most years, was not very good.
Don't you know I need you? Step by step.
I don't have the heart.
Are we come together? Something
must have been love. But it's all
right away. Can't touch this.
However, there was to be an anomaly in 1990, for it was on January 5th of that year that They Might Be Giants released their landmark album, Flood.
Why is the world in love again? Why are we marching hand in hand? Why are the ocean levels rising up? It's a brand new record for 1990. They might be Giants' brand new album, Flood.
I'm not sure exactly how, but somehow Flood made it on to mainstream radio. I mean, it was like a top 40 song. They were playing on The Tonight Show. They were a major phenomenon. And even as an 11-year-old who was not terribly keen on following the latest trends, I was made aware of They Might Be Giants. I think a friend duped his tape copy of Flood and gave it to me. And it was kind of a magical moment listening to Flood. They Might Be Giants have a way of affecting people. I think when they first hear them, people who don't like what's normally on the radio, perhaps, They Might Be Giants somehow they're very appealing. They've been described as nerd rock, and I think it's kind of accurate. They write about things, and they write about history, and they write a lot of stuff that's just nonsense, and it's kind of amazing to hear it for the first time. I think Ira Glass put it best once. He said,
I think the reason why they get like an audience that whose age seems to start at like 12 to 14 is that there's a cleverness to the songs that just kills you when you're that age. You just can't believe like that it could be so clever.
And I think he's onto something there, because they write about stuff. Another Ira Glass quote.
More than other bands, they write about an astonishing number of things in this surprising, funny way. Also, although they're an actual pop band with actual pop hits, it is hard to think of any band in the last 20 years with more inventive arrangements. They just have this sound, this sense of how different instruments go together. They bring pre-rock instruments into the rock universe in this completely charming way.
And once I discovered They Might Be Giants, my thirst could not be quenched. I immediately collected everything I could. I snatched up the very first self-titled release, which had a great number of awesome songs on it. And I also picked up Lincoln, which came out a couple of years after the initial release and a couple of years before Flood. And then before I knew it, Apollo 18 had come out. And by this time, I guess I was like 13, I had my friend's mom drive my friend and I to the mall to go to the record store where they actually carried They Might Be Giants, because you had to go to like the good record store in the mall rather than the whatever it was, like nearer the house that didn't carry good music. I don't know. I don't know. It was a different time. Anyway, so we get into the minivan to head home and we're very excited. We take out the tape because we bought it on cassette. And hey, put this in the car radio, you gotta hear They Might Be Giants, they're the greatest. And what did we hear? Well, the first song was Dig My Grave.
We'll be right back.
which in addition to not being a particularly mom-friendly subject and not really sounding like traditional They Might Be Giants so much. But what was track two? Well, it was a classic They Might Be Giants song called I Palindrome I, which is fantastic and has this as its opening lyric.
Someday.
Needless to say, my friend's mom, I think she was a little taken aback. But she was pretty cool about it because eventually other songs came on that were more palatable, I think, to the moms of the world. Perhaps My Evil Twin or Mammal or something probably won her over. But when I got home, I made sure to hide the liner notes for Apollo 18 so that my mom wouldn't read them and worry about what I was listening to.
I was working all night in my office when a man I had recently killed called me up from a phone near my building. So I looked out the window at him. He had the same obsequious manner that was the reason I had him killed. So to calm my nerves, I sang this song to him over the phone. Turn around.
And I think my efforts to keep my mom liking They Might Be Giants worked because I was actually able to convince her to sign up for some sort of long-distance plan that got relatively inexpensive domestic long-distance calling. So that way I was able to call They Might Be Giants' dial-a-song number, which I think I did at least daily. I still have the number memorized. It's 718-387-6962, in case you're wondering. I called it all the time, and every time I called it, I had a special cassette tape I would put in the answering machine, and I was able to record. So I just have tape after tape of recordings of dial-a-song, which sound terrible, and I don't think I'll ever really listen to, but for grins, I still have them.
I am the king of Wingo, the king of Wingo. Yes, I'm the king of Wingo, the king of Wingo. I am the king of Wingo, the king of Wingo. Yes, I'm the king of Wingo, the king of Wingo.
And dial-a-song was a cool thing because not only did you get to call and hear a song, occasionally Flansburgh would record a little message giving you, you know, show updates or news about the band, or like, we have a new album coming out or whatever. And in 1993, he had a message on Dial-A-Song where he talked about the fact that they were going to be performing a free show in Central Park at an event called Central Park Summer Stage, which I was extremely interested in because my mom had scheduled a vacation to go to Washington, D.C. at about the same time to see, you know, the sights of Washington, D.C.
Lincoln, Washington, that Jefferson guy.
And I looked on a map and I was like, you know, they're not that far apart. Maybe we could just go up from D.C. to New York real quick and see a concert, you know. And my mom was actually kind of okay with the idea, I think, because, you know, you want to see the sights of New York as well. So we were able to arrange it to where we were able to take a train from Washington, D.C. up to New York and catch the They Might Be Giants show. I was very excited about this. So we got to New York City, went to the place we were staying, dropped our bags, and immediately walked to the park. And then the park is pretty big. If you've never been to Central Park, it's pretty big. And there's a lot of places in the park, and the summer stage is a pretty small stage in a pretty big park. And so we wandered around and kept asking people, where's summer stage, you know? And eventually we found it, and we got there just in time to hear the last song, which ironically was Dig My Grave.
Thanks.
So they ended with Dig My Grave, then they came back out on stage and they did Spy, which at the time was a new song, and it was pretty exciting because they had a whole orchestra or a whole horn section or something with them on stage. It was a pretty big affair, and I was particularly disappointed having missed the whole show. But because we'd missed the whole show, we hadn't wasted a lot of time there, and so we were able to wait around, and eventually after waiting around for a long time, I was able to go backstage and meet John Linnell. Flansburgh, I think, had already left, but I met Linnell. And John Linnell, he was very nice to me, which I think a lot of people complain that he's not nice or something. I thought he was exceptionally nice. I really like John Linnell a lot. And he was very friendly and made a little kid, which I can't imagine. If I were him, I would have just been really annoyed. Like, who's this little brat, you know? But he was actually pretty cool about it. So that was a pretty nice experience.
Once a boy named Mr. Maybe, mourned a great regret.
I floundered in the misty sea, but can't abide its mystery. I wound up sad, you bet. So onward go and Edward Poe into the bounding main. Enjoy the show, look out below, but mind the misty sea, or end up sad like Mr. Me. He ended up sad, he ended up sad, he ended up really, really, really sad. He ended up sad, he ended up sad, he ended up really, really, really sad.
And that Central Park Summer Stage show was a pretty unique event because it was the 10-year anniversary concert, as They Might Be Giants tell it at the... I'm not sure if the numbers really add up correctly, but they say that the very first show they ever played together as a band, known as They Might Be Giants, was at Central Park Summer Stage in 1983. A decade later, they played at the same venue doing that show that I missed most of in 1993, and so it was sort of a big deal for them to get to do a 10-year anniversary show. And unfortunately, of course, I missed it.
He ended up really, really, really sad. He ended up sad. He ended up sad. He ended up really, really, really sad. He ended up sad. He ended up sad. He ended up really, really, really sad.
So over the next few years, They Might Be Giants released John Henry, an album that I liked a whole lot. It had a lot of horn section. It was their departure from being just John and John. They recorded with the full band, and it was a very good record, I think. I think it holds up. And then in 1996, they came out with an album called Factory Showroom, which was kind of a departure for them. It was very short compared to their previous albums, which had all had like 20 songs or 19 songs, you know, a lot of songs. And then suddenly Factory Showroom only had 13. And as a fan at the time, I'd been a fan long enough by that point that I'd already heard most of the songs, which I don't know if you've ever been a fan of a band and you follow them really close and you kind of obsessively follow them to where you track all the things that they ever release and you go to live shows and you like trade bootlegs with other people from the backs of like, you know, magazines and stuff. Then when the album comes out, you've already heard a lot of the songs. It's actually, you kind of do yourself in. It's better, I have to say, as a fan to just not investigate that thoroughly, you know, just wait around for the album to come out because you'll like it more. But anyway, when Factory Showroom finally came out, I'd heard a lot of the songs on it already, so for me it was only, you know, a handful of new songs, and I thought it was pretty disappointing. But that said, in retrospect, it's actually a pretty great album as well. So 1996 was a good year for They Might Be Giants, and it was also the year that I first got on the internet at home. I'd had access other places prior, but it was the first time I had access at home. And I was able to set up a They Might Be Giants website, one of a handful of very early They Might Be Giants fan websites. At the time, They Might Be Giants themselves didn't even have a web presence. So, you know, the fan websites were They Might Be Giants' face on the web. And for that website, I created a font. And I created, like, repeating desktop patterns for your computer. And I put up other kind of, like, weird fan kind of crap, and you know, I think I had some audio files you could download. This was before MP3s existed, so, or at least before anyone knew about them. So these were, I would put up like AIFF files or something, right? So pretty early primitive web experience. And then shortly thereafter, They Might Be Giants came out with their own, which was pretty cool and much better than my website or anyone else's. At any rate, so all of this is just to illustrate that I've been a very big They Might Be Giants fan for a very long time, perhaps an obsessively long time. It reminds me of something Flansburgh once said about the fans.
I mean, it's the kind of thing that makes me feel like we are freak magnets.
Yes, that's me, a freak magnet.
I think maybe, but I don't know, but I'm starting to feel like I got a brain problem situation on my hands. I think maybe, but I don't know, but I'm starting to feel like I got a brain problem situation.
Growing up in Dallas, Texas was actually, it wasn't nearly as good for being a They Might Be Giants fan as, say, growing up in New York City, but it was pretty good. You could certainly have done a lot worse. We had a radio station that had a special show on it that was like Sunday nights. We play good music, and they actually play They Might Be Giants, I think to this day, they still play They Might Be Giants on that particular show. It's called The Adventure Club, and it was founded by George Gamark, who actually founded this radio station, The Edge, which I periodically talk about. And then shortly after the creation of the show, George Gamark handed over the reins to Alex Luke, who hosted it for a few years. And his intern, Josh, took over the show when Alex Luke left. Alex Luke, by the way, kind of my hero, radio hero. Anyway, I loved Alex Luke, and I think I got a lot of inspiration for wanting to do radio from Alex Luke. At any rate, on the Adventure Club, Alex Luke or whoever would play not just standard They Might Be Giants songs, but even other things. And here's Alex Luke talking about it.
We're going to be digging into File 13 next here on The Edge for a very, very interesting and very, very early record from They Might Be Giants.
File 13.
And They Might Be Giants used to come to town, and every time they'd come to town, they would go to The Edge and they would record like sweepers for the show.
Hi, I'm John Linnell.
And I'm John Flansburgh, and we're They Might Be Giants. And you're listening to The Adventure Club with Alex Luke on 94.5 KDGE, the cutting edge of stuff.
I really love those sweepers, and I like a lot of things about They Might Be Giants, that they'll just like make up songs for, you know, they did an album of venue songs where they just made up a song for every venue they played at, which, many of which were really good songs. But I think it's a testimony to how good they are at just writing songs. But they also, they strike a chord somehow with people that I touched on earlier, and it's something kind of weird. And I think Linnell, talking about how famous they were versus how famous they could be, and he had a great quote. Let me play it.
Obviously, we could at this moment be whoever it is, fill in the blank, that is in everyone's face all the time. But, you know, I mean, I think we started out with the idea that that seemed very unlikely, that with what we wanted to do was probably not going to be for absolutely everyone in the world, and that, in fact, the bands that often are that popular are not actually really beloved by anybody, that they're just sort of tolerated by the sum total of everyone who buys records.
And I think that kind of, that says a lot about They Might Be Giants.
Please pass the milk, please. Please pass the milk, please.
So, cut to 2001. I'm at work. I've just come back from a vacation, and I get an email from They Might Be Giants. I'm on the fan list, of course. And I get an email, and it's like, hey, some people are making a documentary about us, and for it, they're going to stage a concert. But we need to have it look like a real show, so we need to have audience members come. So we're giving away free tickets. Just email us back if you want to come. It's going to be at the National Polish Home in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, on August 5th, 2001. If you want to come, just email us back, and the first, you know, few hundred people who get back to us will give you free seats. Hey! So I got the email right when they sent it, and I was like, I'll just go to New York, just book a flight. I got a friend up there. I could just stay with friends, and I'll go to see them at Giants. This will be great. So I email back immediately at probably 5 minutes lapse time, and I say, count me in, a guest in. We want to come to the show. And they emailed back eventually, and they're like, okay, you know, we found the however many people. Don't bother emailing us anymore. We've got enough people. But you have to come on time because we've told more people to come than we have space for. So, you know, first come, first serve, but you're on the list, you know, so get there early. And I was like, awesome, I can handle this. And eventually, of course, I was able to arrange with friends who I could stay with. But it was a really great trip. I have a friend who at the time worked in the Empire State Building on the 54th floor. And she let me come up to her office, and it's amazing to get to do this. You go into the Empire State Building, you go to the 54th floor, and then you can just open the windows. They have these huge windows, and you can open them and just lean out the window. And there's no screens or anything. I don't know why it's legal, but you understand why in the 30s everyone was killing themselves by jumping out the windows, because it would be a strong gust of wind could just suck you out the window, it seems like. But I did that, and I went to various places. We went to neat restaurants, and I got to go to other music and see what all the fuss was about, and really overall just have a really great time visiting New York City for the first time since I'd been here in 1993. Now, unfortunately, going and doing all of these fun New York City things had taken up more time than had been anticipated. And my friend Jonas, who was taking me around to see everything, didn't really know where the National Polish Home was. Hey! So when it got down to the brass tacks of like figuring out the logistics of getting there, we realized it was going to take like 3 train transfers to get to where we were going. And it took kind of a long time to get there. And I was looking at the watch going, man, we're going to be late. And I've come all the way to New York City and they're not going to let us in because there's going to be too many people. And I was getting really stressed out about it. And not just a little bit peeved because I really wanted to go to this concert. We finally get to the third train, which is the G train. So we finally get to this G train and I'm looking down the train car. It's not very crowded. And I see this girl sitting at the other end of the train and I point to her and I say, Jonas, look, that girl is going to this They Might Be Giants concert and she's going to get there before us and we're not going to get in and it's going to be horrible. I'm like freaking out. And he's like, well, we'll head her off. We'll beat her there, you know, whatever.
Why did they send her?
So the doors open at the stop and she gets off and we get off and she starts walking and we're like walking trying to catch up to her, you know, because she was at the better end of the train to get to the exit. So she's walking down the street and we're walking down the street and we're like, okay, let's jaywalk and head her off, you know. So we start jaywalking and then she starts jaywalking and she beats us.
When you're following an angel, doesn't mean you have to throw your body off a building. Somewhere they're meeting on a pinhead, calling you an angel, calling you the nicest things. I hear the space program when you sing, you can't hear, there's no air. Times I think I'm kind of like that, and other times I think I'm already there.
We get to the venue directly behind her. She is in front of us at this venue. The way it was arranged was apparently not very well because we ended up sitting in line for about 6 hours. So during this time, we managed to start up conversations with the people around us in line, notably the girl in front of us from the subway.
Found out she's an angel. I don't think she knows I know. I'm worried that something might happen to me if anyone ever finds out. Why did they send her over anyone else? How should I react? These things happen to other people. They don't happen at all. When you're following an angel, does it mean you have to throw your body off a building? Some of them meeting on a pinhead, calling you an angel, calling you the nicest.
She'd just been writing postcards and doing other sort of busy work things. And then eventually she pulled out this very interesting still camera, one like I'd never seen before. I thought it was an old one. It turned out it was new. Shows you what I know about still cameras. But it was sort of a medium format camera. And I was like, what, you know, what is that? And she was like, oh, it's a Russian knockoff of a Hasselblad, which is like the highest end medium format camera. And it's pretty cool. And I'm going to take photos of the show. And I thought that was really cool. And we spent the whole show together, the small group of us from the line. And at the end of the show, we kind of talked and we worked it out that she would send me the photos that she took of the show and I would put them on my They Might Be Giants website, which I did. She had been in New York just for a summer program at the School of Visual Arts. And this was her last night in New York. And she was actually from Louisiana. And I, of course, was from Dallas, and so I was going back the next day to Dallas.
The heat and life of the sun are caused by the nuclear reaction between Highland Park, Oak Cliff, Oak Lawn, and Frisco.
Once we went our separate ways, we started emailing. She sent me the photos from the show, and I put them on my website, and it was pretty cool. We were emailing back and forth, you know, and then one thing led to another and we started talking on the phone, you know, so then we're talking on the phone and it had kind of developed into sort of a long distance relationship, I would say.
The day that love came to play.
So a few months in, it turns out They Might Be Giants are now touring and they are going to be in Dallas, Texas. And so when, you know, we just kind of, we were like, well, you know, maybe you should come, maybe you should come to Dallas, you know, you could come to Dallas and see the They Might Be Giants show with me. And she was pretty open to that, especially since They Might Be Giants were then going to be playing in New Orleans a few days later. So she's like, well, why don't I come to Dallas and we'll see They Might Be Giants? And then we can go back to New Orleans and see They Might Be Giants in New Orleans. And then you can go back to Dallas and I'll go back to Lafayette and it'll all be good. So we did that. And I guess you can see where this is going. It is to say that Kelly and I have a very intertwined relationship with They Might Be Giants. Long story short, which is too late for that, but I'll skip some stuff. A year to the day that we met, August 5th, 2002, Kelly and I loaded up the moving truck and we moved together to New York City.
What's the hassle? I'll buy the castle. We can live like kings. If we're together forever, I've got a world that you've got, a world that we've got, a world that swings. I'd like to take you on this wild, wonderful venture. Fly like a kite through space, no strings. I don't want to lose that bell that rings. I've got a world that you've got, a world that we've got, a world that swings.
We've got a world that swings.
We've got a world that swings.
We've got a world that
swings.
And we hadn't been here that long, maybe a few months, before They Might Be Giants played a special 20-year anniversary show in Central Park Summer Stage, which we were able to attend. It was our first They Might Be Giants show in New York City together after moving here, I think. And then our first Valentine's Day in New York City, They Might Be Giants did a special love show at Joe's Pub, which is an excellent thing. They do these little small shows at Joe's Pub, which are specialty shows where they have a focus on certain types of music, certain parts of their career. They'll play an album in order, things like that. And on Valentine's Day, they did a special love show, which we were able to go to for our first Valentine's Day in New York City.
Don't say it's okay, then go to sleep, Matt. Don't act like the other doesn't know how to drive. Patience is a virtue best shared with a spouse. And remember, love's a verb. And love can be eternity. Ben and Lisa.
Eventually, the documentary Gigantic, A Tale of Two Johns, which Kelly and I met at the taping of in Greenpoint, Brooklyn at the National Polish Home,
hey!
Was released into theaters, and of course Kelly and I lined up to see it. And the result, well, not so great. Honestly, movie, not very good. It's a pretty disappointing movie, I think. I mean, I'm a fan of documentaries. I own probably a lot more documentaries than your average, like, you know, guy who buys DVDs. Like, I'm quite into documentaries. And yet, this one, I think, was just very poorly made. And at the time, I didn't really like it. I liked it well enough because, you know, I had fond associations with it. And I love They Might Be Giants, so, like, how bad can it be kind of thing. But I must say, in preparation for this show, I rewatched it. I liked it even less now. It feels very dated. A.J. Schnack, the director, not so good. I feel like John and John, they're pretty savvy, so it must have been kind of torture for them to, because they didn't have any involvement in the actual making of the film. They just saw it when it was finished. And I feel like they must know that it's pretty crap. I think it just must, which must drive them kind of nuts. But that said, the DVD, I'm happy to have. It has a lot of bonus material on it and stuff. It's fun to watch. I enjoy having the DVD. The packaging, very well done. There's some things about it that are all right. But I read a review in Time Out New York, which Kelly and I agreed was a very accurate review. And in fact, Kelly, why don't you read this for us?
The review is by Billy Cohn. Gigantic, A Tale of Two Johns, is put together like your basic rock band documentary. The problem is that the rock band in question is not basic, and neither is its story. The deity first-time feature director A.J. Schnack is worshipping here is They Might Be Giants, the idiosyncratic Williamsburg-based duo of John Flansburgh and John Linnell. Overlong, and located about 20 miles west of what should have been the point, Gigantic provides an endless stream of clips of the group in concert and interviews with alternative, nerd-cool celebrities. But Schnack is unable to craft the performance footage and comments from author Sarah Vowell, McSweeney's editor Dave Eggers, and This American Life host Ira Glass into an engaging story. This is particularly disappointing because there is a great tale to tell. They Might Be Giants rose with the advent of college radio, echoing a specific time in American rock after the synthesizer disasters of the early 80s and before the dirty grunge of the 90s. All the while, the pair actually maintain its personal sound and style. But this is a nut that Schnack not only fails to crack, it's one that he doesn't even notice when it falls on his head halfway through the movie. Oblivious, Schnack returns to his non-narrative jumble which he needlessly quirks up with forced intrusions like a non-sequitur cartoon and segments in which Janine Garofalo and Michael McKean dramatically interpret They Might Be Giants lyrics. If Schnack had dramatically interpreted anything else in his movie, he might have ended up with something that really was gigantic.
Start. This is the worst part. To believe for all the world that you are my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around. How you get around?
So there you have it. They Might Be Giants, Kelly and Daniel, all wrapped up together in an intertwined fashion that I think few couples and bands can genuinely claim.
Don't let's start. This is the worst part. To believe for all the world that you are my precious little girl. Start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around. How you get around?
If you haven't already noticed the timing of this episode, today is August 6th, 2007, the Monday after August 5th, 2007, which of course was the day that Kelly and I celebrated our 6-year anniversary and our 5-year anniversary in New York City. And the timing couldn't be better, because They Might Be Giants 3 weeks ago started doing 4 weeks of shows, one show a week for 4 weeks at the Bowery Ballroom. 2 weeks ago, we went and saw their 1990s show, which was pretty fantastic. And then last week, we went and saw their horns show, where they had a horn section, which was entirely charming. They were wearing suits. It was, and actually, they played more songs from the 90s at their horn show than at their 90s show. Curious. However, the 90s show we both felt was stronger despite their lack of horns and lack of costumes. But I would say both shows were quite good. In fact, how good were they, Alex Luke? I've heard they were good.
I heard it was simply amazing. Both shows were amazing.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And the timing couldn't have been better for Kelly and I. So there you have it. That's a very personal episode of The Sounds of My Head. If you want to know what I talked over and when, you can look for links to everything I talk about usually on the Sounds of My Head website at thesoundsofmyhead.com. Check back on August 20th for a whole new episode, which will be decidedly normal compared to this one of The Sounds of My Head.
I fell in love with the girl at the rock show.
She said what?
And I told her that I didn't know.
She's so cool.
Gonna sneak it through the window.
Everything is better when she's around. Can't wait till her parents go out of town. Fell in love with the girl at the rock show.
Fell in love with the girl at the rock show. Fell in love with the girl at the rock show. I'll never forget.
Girl at the rock show.
I'll never forget.
Girl at the rock show.
I'll never forget.
Girl at the rock show.
I'll never forget.
Girl at the rock show.